got invited to the Rich Earth Institute down in Brattleboro, Vermont, virtually for their urine summit. On the list of attendees next to us, it said urine enthusiasts. I guess we weren't like fully in the industry yet, but you know, our eyes were opened to the wild world of circular sanitation. And so we heard from all of these researchers that were turning pee into fertilizer and other really cool things. And we're completely inspired by that. And from that experience, decided to start Wasted to see if we could bring this work and these principles to the world in a venture capital environment through the porta potty.
From Vermont Center for Emerging Technologies, it's Start Here, a podcast sharing the stories of active, aspiring, and accidental entrepreneurs. Today, I sit down with Brophy Tyree, co-founder of Wasted, the revolutionary Vermont-based porta potty company that's changing the way people think about waste. Welcome. This is Sam Roach Gerber, recording from the Consolidated Communications Technology Hub in downtown Burlington, Vermont. Hi, Brophy.
Hey, Sam.
I'm so glad you're here.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
You have been on the list for a long time, you and your co-founders, so I'm really glad that you're here. And I actually haven't got a Wasted update in a really long time. So I'm genuinely super excited to hear about what's been going on. But I feel like we have to start by saying I did a little bit of research. December 2021 was the first time that you and I talked. And you asked me, is Burlington a good place to headquarter our company? I said, absolutely. Did I lead you astray or are we happy to be here?
No, I think you're spot on. We're definitely happy to be here.
Okay. This would have been an awkward podcast if that was just like a silence or, we got to get out of here.
No, it's been amazing. I think we couldn't have asked for a better first market. Yeah, we felt nothing but love from the Burlington community.
Hell yeah, that's what I like to hear. Also, I should have probably checked before I did the intro. Is it cool for me to say porta potty or is that like not a good word to use?
No, that's a great word to use.
Okay, great. Yeah. You guys just fully embrace the porta potty.
Yeah, it's what we do.
Amazing. So I think before we get really into the company, I think it's important to understand a little bit of the big picture here. Can you talk to us about circular sanitation and what that means?
Yeah. So I think it's important to understand why we started this company and what we're trying to do to talk a little bit about kind of the macro wastewater environment. So in general, we have these wastewater treatment plants that are placed on coastlines to make the discharging of effluent easy. And a lot of these facilities were designed and built with 100-year-old hydrological records that don't account for rising seas or climate change, really. And so whenever there's a hurricane or even with just median sea level rise, these facilities are at risk of inundation. And also, they were built, 50 years ago, and so the infrastructure itself is being strained, especially as populations increase. So, in the last infrastructure report card, we got like a D- in the United States on wastewater infrastructure, and it would cost an extremely large amount of money to do the retrofits needed to just get these facilities back up to par and to protect them against the changing climate. So not a lot of people know about this situation. There's kind of just a flush the toilet, out of sight, out of mind.
I was literally just going to say that, completely out of sight, out of mind. You don't even think about
it. Just forget about it.
Yeah.
And, that works for most people. But, there's a pretty big crisis when the wastewater treatment plants go down. There's nothing to treat the waste, so it leaks into the environment. They're engineering marvels and they're run by amazing people who are really devoted public servants, but it's just a tricky situation and portable toilets really don't help the problem. They generally have a bunch of chemicals, formaldehyde and other chemicals in them, and they're inserted kind of down the pipe in the wastewater treatment plant that aren't really designed to handle them. And so they just add to that strain. So, and then you see like in Lake Champlain and Cape Cod, our newest market is Boston, but there's a lot of nutrient pollution that comes from wastewater as well as fertilizer runoff that creates these harmful algae blooms that cause aquatic life to degrade. So that's the existing paradigm, but it doesn't need to be that way. Our waste has nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium in it. So those are the nutrients that we currently extract from the earth to create fertilizer, to grow food, which makes a lot of sense. We eat food. We absorb nutrients from the food. We then excrete out pee and poop, the remaining nutrients that we don't absorb, and those should return back into the system to create new life. But because there's so many people, we have to develop this infrastructure to handle all of this waste coming in, creating what's often a linear system. There are a lot of wastewater treatment plants that have some nutrient recovery and biosolids programs. That's not uncommon. But in general, our wastewater system is linear, and these nutrients are ending up, like I said, in waterways where instead of fertilizing food, they're fertilizing harmful algae blooms.
Oof. Yeah. So with circular sanitation, you're taking that waste and you're creating something that can be used again.
That's right. So we view the waste stream as a stream of resources. So these nutrients that can be used for fertilizer, as well as a lot of water that could be recovered for reuse.
Okay. So we can get into the, like, how you're doing that in a second. But first I want to talk about early days, your founding team. There's three of you co-founders, right?
Yeah.
How did you meet?
So I met Thor in the Arctic it's kind of a joke.
You really just have to start there, right?
I mean. So we were in a, on a expedition in Longyearbyen, which is in northern Norway, in Svalbard. And so it's a very long and an interesting story, but Thor was apprenticing to be a polar guide with a guy that I'd met in a bar in Jackson Hole, who convinced me that I needed to climb a mountain in Antarctica. That's Mount Tyree, which was named after my great-great-uncle a few times removed, that I was an admiral in the Navy. So I'd never ended up climbing the mountain, but I went on this expedition
with
Thor. Not yet, exactly. And Thor and I really hit it off. And we spent 8 days pulling a big sled filled with gear through the tundra, looking out for polar bears and reindeer, and had a lot of time to talk. Talked about pretty much everything you can imagine, and eventually got on the topic of human waste in the backcountry. So, you know, at places like Everest Base Camp, where there's a really pristine environment but a lot of human activity, there's not adequate sanitation infrastructure. So there are these pits that get filled up with waste at Everest Base Camp, 26,000 pounds of human waste build up every year. And, you know, they are not properly dealt with. They're combined. So every other animal in nature poops and pees separately in two different places. Nature is designed to process it in that way, but we invented the bathroom. It's a good thing, but it combines solid and liquid waste. And when that combination happens, a compound is created that doesn't biodegrade as quickly. So these pits fill up with waste and then get washed out into the environment. So Thor and Taylor, who I hadn't met yet, were starting a nonprofit to solve this problem. And it got me pretty stoked. So I started helping them out with that nonprofit. It's called Do Good Shit. And its goal was to install sustainable sanitation systems in backcountry environments. So not long after that, Thor convinced me to move to Lake Tahoe. And Thor, Taylor, and I lived next to each other for 3 years through COVID, working on this nonprofit. We installed urine diverting dry toilets that mimic nature to separate the solid and liquid waste. We installed them in Patagonia and Nepal. and a number of other places. And then when COVID really got intense, the international projects got paused when everyone was kind of staying at home.
Yeah.
And I was working on another startup that also suffered due to COVID. It was a travel startup. And so we were kind of bored skiing a lot in Tahoe and didn't have much to do. And so we kind of inspired by our work at Do Good Shit, we ended up being in the urine world and got invited to the Rich Earth Institute down in Brattleboro, Vermont, virtually for their urine summit. And I remember on the list of attendees next to us, it said urine enthusiasts. I guess we weren't like fully in the industry yet, but you know, our eyes were opened to the wild world of circular sanitation. Yeah. Rich Earth Institute has been collecting urine from Vermonters, Brattleboro, for, you know, over a decade, pasteurizing it, turning it into fertilizer, land applying it. And they have really been the glue that's brought together the entire industry in the United States. Mm-hmm. And so we heard from all of these researchers that were turning pee into fertilizer and other really cool things. And we're completely inspired by that. And from that experience, decided to start Wasted to see if we could bring this work and these principles to the world in a venture capital environment through the porta potty. So that was the genesis.
Amazing. I feel like every co-founder should have to like pull a sled in the Arctic together and then live next to each other during a pandemic. Like that's like the ultimate test. Like, is this going
to
work? Yeah,
it's a good way to see, can you get through the Sufferfest together?
Totally. Yeah. That's awesome. And just such a good story. I mean, you can't mm-hmm. make up a story yeah. like that. It's amazing. So a couple questions. You know, one of the things that struck me as you were telling sort of the origin story here is you speak very kindly about people who are in this industry and have been doing this for decades, right? I feel like a lot of disruptors come in and just want to, like, you know, excuse the easy phrase here, but shit on the yeah. existing systems, right? And mm-hmm. I don't know, is that intentional, the way you talk about the folks that are doing this work?
Yeah, totally. And it's really interesting to navigate being an innovator in this space and trying to bring in new technology when, like you said, the attitude is kind of disruption, but recognizing that everyone's doing the best that they can from a really well-intentioned place to solve a problem that's really, really hard to solve. And if you've ever been to a wastewater treatment plant, which most people have not, and see what, you know, what's happening there, one, it's miraculous that we're able to deal with this much material that's coming in to these plants. And the people that are doing it are really doing hidden work that is so critical to making sure that our world operates and stays clean. And it's just a really, really hard waste stream to deal with at the end of the day. And we know that being in there. And so we don't view ourselves as replacing wastewater treatment or anything like that. We're really just trying to find a way that we can support this ecosystem. There's a whole waste treatment ecosystem of, you know, residential waste, industrial waste, you know, septage and portable toilet waste, to name a few. And it really takes an ecosystems approach and a lot of collaboration to deal with it in the most effective way. So I think a lot of our journey in this space has been trying to figure out where we can add value mm-hmm. and where we can remove some of the strain, and where our skills and tendencies can support the industry, like making sanitation sexy is what we really try to do, and make toilets cool and yeah. make wastewater interesting and inspiring. That whole storytelling component has been our secret sauce from the beginning.
Yeah.
And so really taking the people that are already doing amazing work and platforming them and shouting their stories from our rooftops, and trying to get more and more support for an industry that needs it and recognition.
Yeah. I love that approach. And it's, you wouldn't get anywhere without that, right? Like, you need those relationships in order to make your business successful. But it, like you said, we're never going to fully solve this problem, right? It's always going to be there. It's how can we do it most efficiently? Mm-hmm. So I just really kind of value that approach. And I think that because you all have kind of have to start with education, because so, like you said, no one's been to a wastewater treatment facility. They don't mm-hmm. know or see what goes on and want it sort of out of sight, out of mind. But I think if you can start from a place of education, that's huge. And the folks that are in this work every day, sort of front lines, like, they don't have time to go educate people mm-hmm. on it, right?
Yeah. The Burlington Wastewater Treatment Plant, though, does tours.
Do they?
They do. And I would recommend that everyone listening to this go do a tour and see what's happening. You know, I think it's an easy story to tell that, oh, there's algae blooms in Lake Champlain. Wastewater contributes to algae blooms. The wastewater treatment plant must just be dumping our waste into Lake Champlain. Like, I could see how that story would be formed, but that's not what's happening at all. And I think just seeing what is happening is really important as a citizen of Burlington, because, you know, they need support as well.
All right. VSET team field trip.
Yeah.
Yeah. I may keep it a surprise. You know, I say, hey, yeah. guys, we're going out to lunch. And
totally.
Yeah. Surprise. Uh-huh.
You're listening to Start Here, a podcast from Vermont Center for Emerging Technologies. VSET is a public benefit corporation serving Vermont businesses from start to scale. We provide no-cost strategic business advising for any business owner, regardless of stage or industry, as well as venture capital for early-stage tech or tech-enabled businesses. You can find us online at vset.co. That's VCET.co. If you like what you're hearing, please help us out and rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast today. Now, back to the show.
Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about your technology and how you sort of piloted it. And you talked a little bit about Do Good Shit and Rich Earth Institute. Can you talk about really early days? How does your technology work and how have you tested it out?
Yeah, so it's definitely evolved a lot over the years. So I can just speak to what we did this last year in Burlington, which was our first year in market. You know, we had 180 toilets deployed across over 100 sites with 70 customers. So ran a full porta potty company. And in a portion of the fleet, so about 30% of the units, we had a urine diverting system that was collecting separated urine through the urinals. So most people actually think, when they think about human waste, they think about the poop, the manure situation and biosolids, but actually urine has 80% of the nutrients. It's liquid gold. So that's really what we're trying to get. And so we would then in our trucks have a urine tank, a solids tank, and a water tank, and pump out the urine separately and bring it back to our hub, where we would pasteurize the urine to make sure that, you know, the pathogens are not present. And we would remove the phosphorus, which is helpful for two reasons. One is that phosphorus itself is a fertilizer, struvite, but also because Vermont has very phosphorus-rich soil and doesn't need more phosphorus. So in some regions, different regions need different fertilizer compositions. And in Vermont, we don't need for phosphorus as much, but in other places, there is a need for phosphorus. And so at the end of our process, we have a solid phosphorus fertilizer and a liquid nitrogen fertilizer that comes from the urine. And we applied over 2,000 liters of that liquid nitrogen fertilizer with local farm partners in the area. So not on edible crops, but on pasture land, mm-hmm. and have a lot of studies that are coming out now that are showing that that fertilizer actually outperforms the synthetic alternatives, does as well, if not better, which was already proven by the Rich Earth Institute, but it's helpful to have our own data there.
Yeah. Make sure that you guys can actually do that too.
Totally. Yeah.
So you said that, so this past year was the first year that you've actually applied it.
Yes.
And,
that's right.
And results are looking good.
They're looking great. And I mean, like I said, Rich Earth has been doing this for the last decade. And so they have a lot more data, which is pointing to the same truth that urine is a safe and effective fertilizer. And so we only have 1 year, but there's a lot more behind us.
Yeah, that's super exciting. And it is important to have your own data, right? And
totally.
To sort of be able to walk the walk. So is there a portion of your technology that's patented, or is it because it's already been done before, you're just applying it to a new business model? How does that work?
So our original urine diverting system that we actually haven't taken to market yet because mm-hmm. we're still working out the kinks, it introduces a very interesting problem set to be designing a toilet and prototyping a toilet. That is this system that we designed separates the liquid and the solid waste at the toilet level. And in order to test that, you know, it's hard. Most engineers don't want to actually be using real human feces. And so we
can't blame them, I guess.
No, you can't blame them at all. But so we would use other things that kind of simulate feces
that
aren't feces. And then we would do some public testing. But anyway, we're still, our goal is to get to 100% separation. Right now we're getting a lot through the urinal, and you know, our ability to process waste is not constrained by the amount that we're collecting. It's within our permit, we have a certain amount of volume that we can process, and mm-hmm. we're now processing that much, and so we need to expand the permit if we want to do more, which we can do. But our goal is to get 100% separation, and so we have a patent on that system that we're working out, and we also have an exclusive license to the urine diverting toilet that we were installing with Do Good Shit.
Okay.
So this toilet, Thor and Taylor went on a toilet tour where they visited national parks across the United States and looked at all of the systems, took them apart, put them back together, talked to park rangers, saw what was working well and what was not, and by a long shot, they determined that the best solution on the market was this toilet called the Eco de Mayo. And so we anchored Do Good Shit on that. We were buying those and installing them in backcountry environments. And then this year, as we were operating, we had the opportunity to actually purchase the exclusive license for that toilet. And so now we're adding on, in addition to our portable toilets, we'll be using this Eco de Mayo for any off-grid environment. So,
that's,
you know,
awesome.
Public lands, national parks, state parks, mm-hmm. really anywhere, Boy Scout camps, anywhere that's not connected to a sewer, mm-hmm. this is the best solution. And so we're starting to push that product out, which is really exciting, and focusing on Vermont and New York and New England for these systems. And I think our plan is also to take that urine diverting system and put it into trailers for a luxury offering. So we're slowly expanding our product suite.
That's so cool. I love that you have so much going on, right? Like you're proving out the systems, you're proving out the technology, you're acquiring technology. It's just, I love the approach that you're taking from the business perspective. But I keep thinking back to some of our first conversations when you and I first met and how much you've taught me. And one of the things I think I asked right away was like, well, how come no one's disrupted this, right? It like seems like so prime for disruption. And then you're like, well, basically this business is a logistical nightmare, right? Like there's so much to think about. And you're like, literally part of that is just like dealing with pee and poop, which a lot of people don't want to do. And then, like I said, the education piece, the technology piece, the systems. Can you just talk a little bit about how you as a team and as a company have sort of tackled all of that? Because I do think it's like such a massive problem. And I think that's a really hard thing to solve, right? Because you don't know where to start often. Can you just talk a little bit about like how you've approached things? I'm sure like it seems like you have a lot more clarity looking back over the last 3 years or 4 years now, but just talk a little bit about how you decided to take which step.
Yeah. I think it's a good point, right? Everyone says, you know, dirty businesses are great to be in, and dirty businesses are amazing business opportunities and so ripe for disruption. And I think being in a quote unquote dirty business, you see why it hasn't been disrupted. It's because it's really hard to run these businesses. You know, you're doing stuff in the real world that's hard work and often gross work. And, you know, we have plenty of stories, which I won't share, just about what it's like to actually be running a portable toilet company. And, you know, want to give a huge shout out to Jeff Liu, who's been running our Burlington operation, and our first service technician, Paita, who they carried us through this this first operating season. Paita's from the New American community. And they just completely put the team on their back. Because, you know, in order to innovate, we have to put a lot of energy into thinking about technology and strategy and how we're going to do things differently. But at the end of the day, we're running a portable toilet company where we've got 180 units that we need to get to the right place, make sure that they're clean, make sure that they're serviced.
And a lot of customers, it's not like you have two customers.
Yeah.
You know, that's a lot of work.
Yeah, it's a lot of work, and so much appreciation for those guys that were doing that work in the real world. I mean, a lot of our focus was also recognizing that industry best practices are industry best practices for a reason, and so from the naive place of we can do everything better. You know, there are a lot of ideas, but then you get out into the field and you see, oh, this is why they do it this way.
Right. Yeah.
Because this is the best way to do it.
Humbling.
It's very humbling. And so learning those best practices, and in year one, really just, you know, trying to provide a phenomenal service to our customers and do things as well as they're being done in the industry. Mm-hmm. And then now we're in a place after a year of operating where we have data and a lot of data that we've been collecting around how long it takes to service, how much it costs to service, what actually goes into it. And then now we're seeing there are all these levers that we can start pulling and experimenting with to be really data driven about where can we actually make improvements? Where are the highest leverage points? One from a cost perspective and from a efficiency perspective, but also from a sustainability perspective. So where are the biggest emitting areas in this industry and sources of toxicity? And where are we going to get the most ROI in terms of reducing the impact of this industry? So circular sanitation and nutrient recovery is really at the core of the business, but our aspiration is to integrate best practices from a sustainability perspective at every touch point in this ecosystem. And, there's a lot of opportunities to do that. So at this point, now that we're going into year two and we're opening our Boston office, actually we opened in January.
Congratulations.
So yeah, now we've got two going, but we're slowly chipping away to improve efficiencies and improve margins and start to apply more creative and tech-enabled solutions.
Yeah.
on this foundation that we built in Burlington.
It's amazing. And I'm sure it's frustrating at times, right? When there's like areas you really want to change or improve. And it's like, we just have to get through this and kind of get to the next step or collect enough data where we have, you know, real answers here versus just a hunch, right? And I thought that was one of the things I remember you saying you all thought really carefully about is what markets to go into first and why. Can you talk a little bit about that strategy, sort of your sales and business development and why Burlington and Boston and maybe what's next?
Yeah, so Burlington was chosen for a few reasons. One, we love Vermont and it's an amazing place to live and work. And that's really important to us. Two is all of the work that Rich Earth Institute has done in Vermont from a regulatory perspective and an education perspective. It's a small state, but it's really the leader in terms of urine recycling and urine fertilizer. And, you know, we wanted to find a market that had an ethos that was aligned with our company. So really rooted in sustainability and agriculture and just like a groovy place that this would fit in. And from that short list, Burlington was kind of a no-brainer given all of those different things. And, you know, the way that we see Burlington moving forward is it's really our hub for research and development. So as we identify these new solutions to solve problems in this industry, we develop them and deploy them in Burlington to see how they affect the business and our margins and really tighten the screws on that before exporting it to large markets. So that's how we're growing here is viewing it as the hub for innovation and kind of the showcase of what this could look like in the future. And then Boston, we were guided by a couple factors when we chose Boston. One was proximity to Burlington. So, you know, this is a brick and mortar business that requires physical presence. Yeah. And so being able to jump in the car and drive to a major city where we're operating is pretty helpful. And we needed to choose for our second market a large city to prove that this works everywhere. And if you can do it in Boston, you can do it everywhere.
There's that scale, right?
That scale, yeah. There's always an argument that can be made that, well, yeah, it worked in Vermont, because it's Vermont and, you know, it's a hippie town.
Of course it works in Vermont.
Of course you guys are in Vermont. And so we kind of needed to counter that, of course, Vermont with, it also works in Boston.
Totally.
Where, you know, Boston is Boston. Also we, from a couple of years ago, we've got a book of large corporate customers, big general contractors who are bought into the Wasted Vision and they all had headquarters in Boston. Amazing. So we let our customers really, where we knew we had business, guide our next move.
Yeah. And also, you know, I'm just thinking about that breakdown you had in Burlington. Hopefully it's like more toilets with fewer customers, right? Cause that, I assume, makes things a little bit easier.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about route density in this industry. So the more toilets you can have in a smaller radius, the better your margins will be. And so in general, being in a large city like Boston makes your routes a lot denser than, you know, if you're driving up to Stowe.
Totally.
And we try to make our routes as dense as possible, but Vermont's a pretty rural place.
Yeah, it's pretty impossible to do that. Yeah.
So ideally as many toilets as possible on job sites, but really designing routes that are have a lot of toilets on them.
You must be so excited to see the data from Boston, because I feel like it's going to be, everything's going to kind of improve, right? Because of that density.
Yeah, totally. I mean, because of the density, but there's a lot of variables that there's a lot of variables that make it hard to predict exactly how things are going to shake out. So, you know, there's a lot more density. There's also a lot more traffic.
Right.
So how those things balance each other out, you know, the cost of labor and the ability to find and retain service technicians. So there's a lot we're going to learn in this first year in Boston, like we did last year in Burlington.
Yeah. And Boston is not, for those folks that may not know, Boston is not a grid like no. every other city in the country. And that makes things a little bit mm-hmm. more difficult. We love you, Boston, but
yeah.
It's basically like, you know, horse paths that were paved yeah. at one point.
And, you know, I think the goal is that at the end of this year, we'll have a medium-sized market and a large market blueprint,
yep.
recognizing that they're different environments that will require different operational strategies. But then we'll have a package that can be deployed in a lot of different places nationally.
So exciting. Mm-hmm. It's really, really exciting. And, like, just pause and congratulations on, like, doing what you said you were going to do. Like, we had this conversation 3 or 4 years ago and you said, this is the plan and here we mm-hmm. are. So it just makes my heart happy.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
So one thing I wanted to touch on, is financing the company. How have you all approached that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in, I guess it was July, we were really scrappy in the beginning. So we used Safes,
nice.
And kind of raised as much money as we needed until things started to get scary and the flags were up, and then we would raise a little bit more. And so looking mostly at angels and pitch competitions, mm-hmm. were really helpful, both the pitch competitions themselves and then the networks that we would develop out of there. You know, this company does really well in pitch competitions.
Yeah.
Because it's fun.
It's so fun.
It's like,
yeah, it's different. It's unexpected.
Sea,
yeah.
In a sea of SaaS, you know, the porta potty people.
Totally.
It's electric.
Yes.
So, we did well in that way. And so, yeah, I mean, really we were really scrappy and, raising a little bit of money at a time, while we proved as much out as possible. So building prototype units, getting them out into the field, getting people pooping in them, mm-hmm. Really trying to, so that on the hardware side, and then really trying to build a case for why the circular processing is going to work now and why in the long run it will improve margins. So looking towards a future where we're actually making money processing and extracting the value of the waste, where other people are paying for them is the vision.
Yeah.
And so building that case. And then once we had those prototypes on the ground and the case was strong, we hit the fundraising hard and yeah. had as many conversations as possible with pre-seed funds and got connected actually through another Burlington entrepreneur, Grayson, mm-hmm. who CEO of Resonant Link, and he's a fellow Dartmouth grad. He connected us to Third Sphere, which is a climate tech hardware pre-seed seed fund. And they just got infected by the vision and totally bought in, and they were our first institutional money in. And then Shilpi, who's the lead partner on that for that deal, she really took us under her wing and put us through a little bit of a bespoke accelerator for about 6 months leading up to our seed round, just helping us sophisticate what we were doing and build the case. And really the key inflection point was when we went out to do some customer development and pre-sales mm-hmm. to get LOIs and purchase orders to just show that there was some demand, which had been really anecdotal before.
Yeah.
And so we went out and we talked to as many construction companies as we could find and pretty much across the board, these multinational general contractors said, you know, if you had this, we would definitely use it. It sounds like an amazing thing.
Hell yeah.
And so sales, pre-sales ended up being a huge success. And so we had this stack of letters of intent that were really the foundation for our fundraise and went out into the venture capital market. And, you know, had some prototypes that were working in the field. We had a strong case for the future of processing and a stack of LOIs and a pretty coherent plan, just enough, I'd say, to convince people that we were worth a shot.
And an awesome team.
Yeah, and an awesome team. And that didn't, it definitely wasn't easy. It was a massive grind.
Yeah.
Going out there and hundreds of pitches and, you know, a lot of diligence questions over the course of 9 months and in a tough time. But we got really amazing leads and collaborative fund. And
how much did you raise?
We've raised a total of almost $8 million.
Awesome.
If you include the safes in the beginning.
Yep.
But the price round was closer to $6 million.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love, thank you for sharing that. And I think I just have so many conversations with aspiring founders and, you know, I think that the perception is that companies that have raised, let's say $6 to $8 million, like have some secret formula, right? Have some like advantage that they don't have, but really it's hundreds of meetings. Like you said, it's hitting the pavement and getting those LOIs. And I think a lot of founders underestimate how powerful that is to investors. Mm-hmm. And how willing some customers are to have that conversation, right? Mm-hmm. And to make those commitments. So thank you for sharing just how much work goes into it, right? Because of course you have to have a good technology, a good business plan, a good team, but like, it's also just a lot of like really unfun phone calls and visits in person and emails and cold calls, all kinds of stuff to get to that point.
Mm-hmm. And also I think the process of going through those hundreds of meetings and getting rejected hundreds of times, a lot of the time they say why it's a pass.
Yeah.
And that feedback loop was really transformative for us in terms of actually refining the business and what it is that we're doing. And so the company that we were pitching in the first meeting was vastly different than the company that we were pitching, you know, 3 months later when we got our lead. So it's kind of the gauntlet that you need to go through. Otherwise, if you're just building in your own heads, there's a lot of blind spots.
Yeah.
And so it sucks, but it's definitely a necessary step.
Totally. You got to be embarrassed by what you first put out there, right? Yeah. And like, man, I wish we could. That's what I always say. Like, don't start with your like most exciting prospect for investors because your pitch is going to get so much better.
Yeah.
I can't believe, but we're almost out of time here. And before we wrap up, I do have to ask you the most important question. Yeah. And that's the magic wand question. So if you could change one thing about Vermont today with a magic wand, what would you change?
If I could change one thing about Vermont. It's pretty dreamy. I think if we could have more powder and less rain during the winter, it would be the perfect place on earth.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, we lived in Tahoe.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been an adjustment coming back to East Coast snow.
Yeah.
So,
well,
yeah.
It makes you a better skier.
Makes you a better skier. Right? And, and it makes you, you know, it humbles you.
Absolutely.
If there was powder here, it would be too good.
Yeah.
I think it would be a god realm.
I love it. I love it. All right. Well, we'll hope for more powder. I think we're close to some. I feel it coming.
Yeah, me too.
A little tingle.
Yeah, I can taste it.
Brophy, thank you so much for your time today and sharing your story. I think we're going to have parts 2, 3, 4, 5. Like, I just can't wait to see this company grow. So thank you so much.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
This has been Start Here, a podcast sharing the stories of active, aspiring, and accidental entrepreneurs. This series is supported by the Vermont Technology Council and Consolidated Communications.